Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 635. It's the 11th of November, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Colin Hutchinson, CEO of Ascent Resources, that's AST, and explains about today's IPPC permit and operational update. Plus, I also have Paul Vonk, Managing Director of Angus Energy, ANGS, talking about their assets and upcoming float on Monday. This is a very interesting story. Angus Energy were the guys behind the discovery at Horse Hill. And we know how that went. It hit, all the front pages of the newspapers up and down the country. And it's now been described as the Gatwick Gusher. It had 120 billion barrels of oil, apparently, prospective resources there. Now, Angus Energy walked away from that. Why? Because they have two assets down the road mirroring the same geology. They have production licenses ready to go. Horse Hill only have exploration licenses. And they think they have similar potential there, if not better. And Paul explains why. And they've got the money. Like I said, they're floating on Monday. The ticker will be ANGS. And they're ready to go. It's short term before they start drilling here. It's a very interesting story, like I said. So worth, I think, putting on your watch list to see what happens here. That's Angus Energy, not float till Monday. Also on the podcast, I have Nicola Duke, technical analyst, that looks at the following charts. Lek Oil, Seven Digital, Sky, CloudTag, and Oxford Pharma Science. Plus, I also have Simon French, chief economist at Panmure Gordon, talking about what else this week? The Estonian government collapse. And Trump and Bank of England. I've also got the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs on the Vox Markets website this morning.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Hutchinson, CEO of Ascent Resources, AST. Colin, thank you for coming on.
Thanks, Justin. It's very good to be back.
Yeah, it was very last minute. I saw your RNS go out. And before we get into that and the complications of all that and going through the story there, just explain for new people of the podcast what Ascent is all about, please, Colin.
Sure, Justin. I mean, Ascent, we're onshore European gas. We've got a big asset in Slovenia, a lot of gas in the ground, 456 BCF worth a couple of hundred million euros, maybe more than that now with the exchange rates. We raised some money a couple of weeks ago, which has funded our capital program. And we're currently recompleting wells and getting processing equipment ready to put the field into production early next year.
Yeah, now, the bit of news that came out today, it's good news, but it doesn't affect whatsoever. You're still, like you said, going to be producing gas early next year. But just explain, it's about the IPPC permit. I remember chatting with you about this with you a while back. Explain, Colin, the history behind this, because it's quite convoluted.
It is a little bit. The company has several different routes to get gas into market. The one that's going to deliver gas early next year is independent of this permit, and it uses an existing pipeline network to export the gas to Croatia for sale, untreated gas to Croatia for sale. Mm-hmm. The long-term plan for the field is to construct our own processing plant to clean the gas and put it into the Slovenian national grid, which we think we'd get a higher margin for that. Mm-hmm. It would be better for the Slovenian economy. They'd get more revenues and better for employment in the region because we'd build a processing plant.
Yeah.
In order to do that, we need to get a permit. It's an environmental permit. We've been going through a process for going on for three years now to get this permit. It was awarded by the Environment Agency in middle of last year. It got appealed against by a couple of environmental groups. It was approved again by the ministry towards, I think it was November of last year, and one of the environmental groups then took it to a court appeal. The court in May this year ruled against us and said that, well, they didn't really rule against us, they didn't endorse anything the environmental group had said, but what they did do is they made a strange ruling based on European law. They said that the Environment Agency, basically the environmental regulations changed in July 2014. We'd submitted our permit in June 2014, and the court said that we should have followed the regulations that were brought in July 2014, even though we'd already submitted our permit in our application in June 2014.
Yeah, you'd need a time machine to do that, wouldn't you?
Yes, we'd need to get the DeLorean out and get ourselves back. But it was a very strange ruling. It was basically a ruling against the Environment Agency to say they hadn't followed the correct process. So we were very disappointed. They were disappointed. The government, I think, was disappointed. The press in Slovenia was very negative against the court decision, particularly whenever then we really announced that we were going to export the gas to Croatia instead. So we've been working with the Environment Agency to try and sort of rectify the problem. The new regulations that come in mean that you've got to do what's known as a preliminary screening process, where you make an assessment of what's involved in the facility you're going to construct. And they look at that and then decide whether you need to do a full environmental impact assessment. If you have to do a full environmental impact assessment, it could add another year to the process and gives all these sort of groups that want to cause trouble much more opportunity in public consultations and appeals processes. The good news for us was that the Environment Agency have looked at our preliminary screening application and concluded that we don't need to do a full environmental impact assessment. So that opens up the way to sort of fast track us to the IPPC permit again. The group who appeals against everything we do and appeals against most things that go on in Slovenia has predictably appealed again. Their appeal doesn't raise anything new, and their arguments are vague and spurious. So I very little doubt that the ministry will come down in our favour again, and I'd expect them to take another month or two and then come back and say that they've knocked them back. So I think what this decision today, or the decision that the Environment Agency has made in relation to not forcing us down the environmental impact assessment route, should mean that the IPPC permit will be delivered hopefully middle of next year, sometime next year. And that's very much fits within our development plan for the field, because we've got this contract to sell gas untreated to ENA, which I expect to run for a year or two. During that period, I was hoping to get the permit approved. And then once we get the permit approved, it takes about a year to build out our own plant in Slovenia. So I would expect this to fit within our development plan. So I'm very pleased with the news.
Yeah. So essentially, it's got red tape for the sake of red tape here, isn't it? And they're just trying to tie you up red tape. But now it looks like the Environment Agency there have seen a bit of sense, and they said, no, you don't have to do the full environment assessment. And it's almost like a ticking box exercise, it seems like, just to placate the environmental protesters. But it looks like there's a fast track. And like you say, in the meantime, you get gas flow exported to Croatia. And it's basically smoothed your path somewhat, and in time, and hopefully, so obviously, in revenue as well, I suppose. So it's all going ahead, and it's going in the right direction, essentially, Colin. Is that the case?
Yes, this is very much the news that we wanted to get back from ARSA, that they weren't going to push us down the more detailed route. It bodes well, I think, that we've got that they seem to be working with us. That everyone seems to be supportive of the project. It's just really this small group of sort of rather extreme environmentalists that would object to anything. I mean, they object to any new development going on in Slovenia. So their protests aren't unexpected, and we fully expect to get past this and get our permit awarded soon.
Yeah, I mean, there's environmentalists. They fail to understand that this will create jobs and revenue. I mean, they won't be happy until everyone is sitting in a field with no houses, no money, just eating off the land. And, I mean, that's when they'll be happy, but no one else will, you know?
Yes.
So, okay. All right. Well, listen, Colin, as always, you are in the top 10 most followed companies on the Vox Markets website.
Good.
Yeah, let's try and get you up higher there. So, give us three reasons why someone should hit the follow button on Ascent Resources, please.
Three reasons. Well, I've probably been through these a few times. I think Ascent has got a great asset in Slovenia. There's a lot of gas in the ground. It's close to infrastructure. And we've got a route through to gas now early next year. We've raised the money. Second reason, we've got the cash in the bank now to fund the development program and fund ourselves through to once we're operating cash flow positive next year. And I think the final reason today, we've got proof that the the government bodies, the Environment Agency, is supporting the project and is demonstrating that by the decision they made today.
Yeah, well, it seems like the government and the Environment Agency are seeing sense rather than listening to the opinions of this small group of maniacs.
I think, in fairness, they've supported us all along. They've consistently ruled in favour of the project. And, I mean, I'd like them to make these decisions more quickly and that we could get through this without having any further delays. But I think the fact that they're supportive is great news for the project and for the company.
And I suppose they have to sort of nod towards the environmentalists to sort of say, yes, we are doing things with this, but essentially they're on your side there. So, good. Yeah. Colin, thanks very much for coming on, and hopefully speak again soon with some more good news.
Perfect. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul Vonk, Managing Director of Angus Energy, and ticker of that is ANGS. Paul, thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much, Justin.
Now, I've got to explain that people may be looking up that ticker, but they won't find anything today because you're not listed as yet, but you are on Monday. And, Paul, explain a little bit about the business, a summary, if you will.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. We are an independent, Angus Energy is an independent onshore UK oil and gas production company. We're an OGA-approved and EA-permitted company with two fields in southern England in the Weald Basin. One is called Brockham, the other is called Litsey, and we have raised £3.5 million to drill two development wells at those sites.
Excellent stuff. Now, many people may not have heard of you, but they've probably heard of what you've done, the work you've done, because a while back you drilled and discovered the Horse Hill discovery, which hit, you know, the front pages of national newspapers up and down the country here, and it was described as the Gatwick Gusher later on, because apparently there was a chance of prospective resources of 120 billion barrels of oil, and it was everywhere. And as a result, UK oil and gas share price went through the roof. Now, take us a bit through that, Paul, your discovery there, and also why you decided to walk away from that.
Now, we are indeed the company that drilled the Horse Hill well, because we, in 2012, we acquired the Brockham production field, and there was an exploration license next door, that license that is now currently called Horse Hill. We were interested in it because we had been producing, well, the Brockham site had been producing from the Portland for years, and the geology is very similar. But our geologists thought that there would be a deeper layer of more interest. So we thought, hey, that could be really interesting. So we created this company called Horse Hill Developments Limited that did the farm-in deal with the then owners of the license, Magellan Petroleum. They currently have a 35% remaining interest. But we're not an exploration company. We're a private company. We're focused on production. We're focused on development. And this was going to be an expensive well. So we thought that it would be prudent for us to get partners in to fund the well. So we created this company that owns 65% of Horse Hill. And then we got partners in, so we got diluted over time. It's a fantastic well result, because what this well proved that there is movable hydrocarbons in the Kimmeridge limestones, which is something that had never been, you know, thought about or even proven. And what that Horse Hill well test has done is really open up that play.
Do you know what? This is where it gets interesting, Paul, because you, having discovered that, and you realised you were diluted down a bit, I think it was 16% you had, now you decided pretty much, hang on a sec, we're not going to go here, we're not going to go any further with this, because we've got production licences down the road, 5 miles down the road at Brockham, and the geology is similar, so you think there's a good potential there, is that right?
Well, at Horse Hill, it's still early stage, but at the well test earlier this year, they've proved that they could move hydrocarbons actually in large quantities, much larger than people originally expected. They didn't flow for a long time, but what the geologists now think the reason why it flowed so well is that at Horse Hill, in the Kimmeridge layers, the maturity, so that in order the kitchen to make oil was just right there, and that the limestones were naturally fractured. So the shale that is surrounding all those Kimmeridge limestones, they call it the Kimmeridge shale, is like the source rock. That's where the oil is coming from, but you produce it from these fractured Kimmeridge limestones. So that is a fantastic result. At Brockham, we have the same. The rock, the oil, was just as mature, actually slightly more mature than at Horsehill. So that means that the ingredients to produce oil that you can actually use, the crude oil, is just right. And the indications are also that those Kimmeridge limestones are naturally fractured. So we will not do any hydraulic fracturing. There's a variety of reasons why we can't do that. But the point is, it nature has already done it for us. So the indications are it's just as mature as Horsehill, and it is as naturally fractured. And those are the two key conclusions from the NuTech analysis, which our engineers also agree with. And therefore, we have a strong incentive to assess those Kimmeridge limestone layers at Brockham.
Excellent stuff. So it's looking very exciting. I mean, you know, the geology is very similar. In fact, even a little bit better, you're thinking. So you've raised $3.5 million, and your market cap is going to be around about, I think, it's below $10 million, I think, compared to like UK Oil and Gas, three or four times bigger than you. But so what are you going to do with the money there at Brockham and Lindsay? Where are you going to drill first? What are you going to do?
We raised £3.5 million, which makes us very well funded. We were heavily oversubscribed. We originally went out to the market because we wanted to raise £3 million. Mm-hmm. And that would give us plentiful capital to drill the sidetrack at Brockham and to drill a production well at Lidsey, where we're currently producing about 20 barrels a day. We shut it in for the moment, but we want to drill a nice horizontal well that should lift production from that side up to 300 barrels a day. We own 50% of that site, and we want to drill a sidetrack at Brockham. Well, we already discussed the exploration element of the Kimmeridge limestones, but if we just look at the individually assessed numbers by the reserve auditor, we are going to increase production there from 35 to 150 barrels a day production. So we own 55% of the Brockham site. So the two together will make the company an operator that produces about 400 barrels a day gross. So low OPEX, around $14 at one side and about $20 on the other side. So that means even in the current depressed, oil price environment, these are really strong cash flow generators. They will provide us with the funding to really act on additional opportunities, provide a stable basis for the company to grow further from.
Yeah, but more importantly, there is this potential, isn't it, to tap this, what could be, quite an amazing resource. Is that the case?
Well, it will be transformational. So we had a longer discussion about it internally with the board. I said, what should we do? And what we've done is we've priced the IPO at a pre-money valuation of £9 million. The majority of it is backed up by, competent person report. In addition to that, there's a small exploration element in there, which if we can duplicate what happened at Horsehill, but we can do that at Brockham, that means it will be transformational for the company.
Wow.
And all the shareholders will share in the upside there, because if that is the case, then we have great competitive advantage over, our peers there, is that the Brockham site is a production site. So therefore, our production license allows us to, produce oil from Brockham. And if the oil flows from the layers that we expected, like the Kimmeridge limestones, then we can put it into immediate production, and that immediate production can then fund the further development. And those numbers that could potentially come out of those limestones are an order of magnitude larger than, the development place that we're looking at.
Wow, so you could be in the front pages of the newspapers again, Paul. You never know.
Well, it's early stage. We like to hit the newspaper headlines for all the right reasons, but the point is that, Horsehill was a fantastic result. We drilled it on time, we drilled it on budget. We're a production company, we're not an exploration company, and there is still a lot of technical questions. This is great, because what the Horsehill well test has proved is that there's movable hydrocarbons at those Kimmeridge limestones at Horsehill. which is fantastic. So now you come into an engineering problem, and if we and engineering problems are things that can be solved. So there's a huge amount of unknowns, but those are fantastic problems to have.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's very exciting, you know, and it must be quite exciting to be, you know, sitting on the edge of this to see whether, you know, you're going to discover this massive resource or not. But it's very exciting. All right, Paul. Listen, if anyone needs any further convincing, they can't do it yet because you're not listed, but I'll just do it anyway. So when you are added to the Vox Markets website, people can hit that follow button. But could you give us three reasons why someone should follow you and put you on their watch list, please?
Well, Angus Energy, we are an independent oil and gas producer. We're a low-cost operator. We have a proven track record of delivery. We drilled a variety of wells, which, of course, the Horseshoe one was the most prolific one. But there's huge upside potential in our current portfolio, but also with, you know, having this cash flow generator basis in there, you know, the shareholders will be exposed to a lot of exciting future developments.
Paul, lovely to chat to you, and listen, I look forward to chatting to you again as the story unfolds and you start working there, and it'll be a very exciting story and one to be part of. So listen, come back and chat when you have further news, all right?
Looking forward to it, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Wade.
And joining me on the podcast right now, it's Nicola Duke, the lady with the technicals, the Duchess of the Chart, with the Fibonacci's. You alright, Nick?
Hello! Yes, really good. What a wild week!
I know, it's phenomenal, really. But I was just saying, I was just chatting to Simon French, the turnaround and everything, very quick this week. I mean, gold really spiked up, came back down, you know, when people realised, hang on, Donald Trump may be good for business. You know, we don't know, he's got a track record in business, maybe he's good for business, we don't know, maybe he's good for equities, you know? And we saw this huge change, very quick change, didn't we, you know?
Yeah, well, he said, I absolutely love it, I love this volatility, I really do. You know, it's a proper trader's market, so if you're careful.
It's a trader's. For myself, I sat and did nothing. Yeah. You know, I didn't trade anything. I'm not a trader. I'm more of an investor, of course. And I sat there, thought, well, I don't think it's going to be that bad fundamentally, really, for the stocks I'm in. You know, how is that going to affect? For one of my stocks I hold, for example, is a company bringing gas to bed methane power in Botswana. I think, how's it going to affect that?
Yeah.
You know, it's not. How's it going to affect copper mining in Indonesia?
It's not. What's hurting the big cap UK stocks at the moment is the huge rebound in the pound. You know, the dollar is having a huge rally, and the only thing outperforming the US dollar is the British pound, which is ripping.
Yeah.
And that's really hurting, like all the big stocks I looked at today, you know, Tate and Lyle and stuff, really hurting because of the strong pound. So
it's the best performance of the pound against the dollar since October 2009.
It's extraordinary. It's really good. Well, this is what a short squeeze looks like. This or copper is a really good example of a short squeeze.
Well, I got another fact about copper. You know, 14 days now, it's gone up. That is the best performance, best winning streak by copper for 28 years.
Right. Well,
that's phenomenal, isn't it?
Gosh, is Trump really going to build that much stuff? Do we really need this much copper? No. The reason that copper is doing this is the yuan very quietly, while the China very quietly, while all this election stuff was going on, has been devaluing the yuan, which is now down 15%. So if you're in China and you want to put your money in something, right, gold is really expensive to buy and really quite hard to buy in China. It's quite hard to get hold of physical gold. Copper, there's loads of it. So I think this is, you know, we've seen them do this before. If they keep devaluing their currency, honestly, they're going to probably end up bartering, aren't they? Poor people.
They're very sneaky, though. They do things like this. Obviously, quietly devaluing while no one's looking. You know?
Exactly. It's like, 15%, though. Like, you know, we did that in the pound. Everyone was talking about it. And they're a massive country. Yeah. So that, I think, is behind a lot of the copper rally. Because, you know, this strong dollar isn't really good for copper.
Yeah, Chinese man. Hey, man. Okay, let's get on to stocks suggested by the fair people of the UK. So on the chart here, first one up is Lek Oil. L-E-K is the ticker here, and I'm not much over this stock, to be honest. I know nothing about it fundamentally, but apart from Lek, the ticker.
This chart is beautiful. Well done, Gold Star, whoever picked this one. Lovely. So since the end of September, we've been making a really nice bull flag or bull pennant. We've broken up from it today. So the breakout level is about 22. This one looks really good. The target, which is 28.90, which is those 2015 highs, which we've, you know, 1, 2, 4, like that was the high 4 or 5 times. That's a big deal level. I think we'll bounce off it the first time we tag it, and we might even do, you know, make a very big head and shoulders, but that is the level. And in fact, if we get a weekly close above sort of 29, then we're rocking and rolling, and you can look much higher. But certainly for now, we're at 23.50. I like this to 29.
Okay, cool. Next one, 7digital, 7DIG, 7dig. What do you reckon on the chat?
Yeah, it's really trying. So at 5, you know, we've got we've bottomed 4 times since this stock has been this year. So, and we really are trying to rally off it. For the first time, it looks like we've made a lower, a higher low. We had a bullish hammer, you know, 3 weeks ago on the weekly. It's really having a go, but it's not quite there. So the first pivot level is 5.72. And that was the highs for all week. Every day, that was the high. If we can close above that today, 5.75. So if we close at 5.8 or better, I really do think that this has got a chance. And then that would be the first daily close above the 20-day moving average since the end of September as well. So that is a really bullish sign that we're back on our way. So keep an eye on where we close on that one today. 5.8 or above 5.78 would be a really good sign that we're going to try. So then the next trouble for this stock would be the 200-day moving average. And there's a bit of a pivot level at 7.45. So that would be the first trouble area if you bought it.
Okay, cool. All right, the next one is do you know what? I've got to admit, I did slip this one in because I don't know what's happening here. I mean, it's been hurting from the FTSE General selling off. But I'm thinking, I don't see why this should be being affected. Sky, because, you know, they get their revenue mostly from the UK and Europe, which is, you know, not a bad thing. But what's happening with Sky there? I've seen it, right? I've seen it trying, but it's been dragged down by the FTSE. And it keeps trying, and it can't get it. It keeps dragging it back down.
No.
And I'm thinking, we saw a low, didn't we? At, what is it? 767, and it's now 788, and it's not far from that low. And I'm thinking, what's going
Somebody
on?
Somebody asked me for Sky on Twitter this week, and I didn't get around to it, and I'm really sorry. So I'm glad we are having a look at it. So, yes, it's a bit annoying because Sky had quite a good fib level at sort of 805, and then ABC, if it's corrective and it's going to rally, you know, we should hold on here. So I don't want to see a daily close below 788.5, which is where yesterday and today and where we are, right? Mm. So I think that if we do, we're going to go to the bigger fib level, which is below here at 745. Like, I would be a massive buyer there at 745.
Yeah, but okay. We massive don't buyer. Really, that would move
we
it.
We don't really, if we can help avoid it, want it to go there. So there is a good chance that we could hold on, and this is the level. We don't want to see it below here. Otherwise, yeah, back up the truck and fill up at 7.45.
Well, if it gets to 7.45 and you're buying, Nick, the market's behind you as well, with you throwing your money in there.
So and I don't
Nick
know,
money like bags is in there. Get
I don't
in there.
Know why it's hurting either, you know, unless they have bought a lot of stuff and
I know there's been I know ITV as well have said there's going to be lower advertising revenue. They've had a profits warning ITV and you know, and all this stuff. But listen, you know, Sky don't rely on that alone. They have subscriptions as well, so it's not. And their advertising revenue in their last update was not down as much as the market was. The market was down about 5-6%. They were down 3% in advertising revenue, but they have other income streams, you know. And
I don't understand it. So you know, should be a subscription model. You know, we buy Netflix and Amazon Prime and there's no ads at all. You know, you just get what you pay for.
Yeah, and I think they're more up on the cutting edge of tech than ITV. You know, they've got VR there. They're signing up drone leagues and all this. They really are in touch with cutting edge. They've got Now TV, which is subscription stuff. So it's this is the problem.
Perhaps they overpaid for a few things.
They did overpay for the football, yeah, 600 million. So they got to take that on board. So there we are. So okay, next one. Most popular company followed on the Vox Markets website is CloudTag. I had the CEO on this week, Amit Ben-Haim. CTAG. What's happening here? It went all the way up to 22 pence. Pretty much within 6 months from September, it went from 5 pence to 22 pence. It went back down, dipped to sort of around about 8 pence, and now it's at 10.25 pence. Where's it going from
this
here?
This is a really volatile stock, isn't it? But you know, when you live by the sword, you die by the sword. And this is what this chart says. So, but we've had a really good five-wave rally up. So what we want to see is a two-wave rally correction and hold on to about a 618 Fibonacci support. And that's at 10.04. And that is, you know, right where we've had a good old spike below. Only one day though, and that was at the beginning of the week. So I think if we can hold on to 10.04, that there's a really good chance that we bounce from here to about 15.3. In Fibonacci retracements, there's a golden ratio zone between the 618 and the 382 retracements. So if you hold on at a 618 retracement, you will normally bounce back to the 38.2, and that's up at 15.3. And then you'll normally come back to the pivot level in the middle, which is 1268, and where you go from there. So you'll bounce in this zone, and that's the middle pivot. And then once you break out of it, then that's really a directional move once you get out of that zone. So if we bounce from here, I would expect resistance at 15.3. If we get above 15.3, I think we can say that the next leg higher is underway. But if we hold here, it is definitely corrective and it still looks all right. The only bit of caution for CloudTag people is the 200-day moving average hasn't caught up. So when I see that on a chart, when we hit the level you want to be at and you're all ready to do it, but the moving average hasn't caught up, sometimes that's when the market will knock around sideways and it's just waiting for that moving average to catch up. So keep an eye on it because that's what you're looking for.
Okay, and the last one, OXP, Oxford Pharma Science. What do you reckon here?
This is one I don't like, sorry. So it's just...
Okay, well, let's leave it there then.
It's just a bit ugly. There's a very good chance that it could hold on, and there's good Fib support at 1.59, between 1.59 and 1.8. There's a good chance it could hold on. If it can't hold on to that level, it will go below the 2012 lows down to 0.32, which is, you know, considering we're trading, 1.9, that's not very good. So I'd like to, it's got to hold on to 1.5. It's still trending lower at the moment. Be careful and watch for it to hold on at 1.59.
Marvellous. Nick, have a nice weekend. Send me the charts, your annotated charts, and I'll put them on voxmarkets.co.uk/blog, and people can see them, and they can also listen to the podcast and see what we're talking about. Thanks, Nick. Have a nice weekend.
Thank you. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Wade.
Joining me on the podcast right now is Simon French, Chief Economist at Panmure Gordon. Morning, Simon. You're right.
Good morning, Justin. Very well. And yourself?
Yes, I'm good. But listen, there's only been, you know, one event this week that's really caught everyone's eye. And as you know, well, you reveal it, Simon.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, it's all been about politics this week, hasn't it? And the fall of the Estonian government.
Yeah, I can't believe that.
Vote of no confidence. No, I mean, look, it has been Donald Trump's election to as president-elect of the United States of America. But we reference Estonia because the other political news was that government has fallen, and clearly being on the border between the European Union and Russia, and given what Donald Trump has said about the support the US military will give to NATO, I think this is a little story that kind of segues us into the impact of Trump and onto Trumponomics, because actually what his attitude will be towards the rest of the world is as yet unknown. There's talk of Trump light, Trump dark. Which version of, is he going to be a deal maker? Is he going to be an ideologue? In reality, none of us know. But the kind of early foreign policy forays, and you know, the relationship with Russia, the relationship with China, are probably the two most important ones to look at. I think that'll give us a really good indication on what kind of economic policy we'll have, whether he'll follow his campaign rhetoric, or whether he'll be much more pragmatic.
Yeah, do you know what struck me is the fast turnaround, not only in people's opinions or their public opinions, but the markets as well. It's almost reflected in both. So the markets sold off strongly, or the futures were down massively. Mm. I think limit down at just before opening, S&P and NASDAQ, and 800 points for the Dow down, and the FTSE was very similar. And then all of a sudden, opened up, and the market sort of rebounded, and then all of a sudden, these scathing opinions that people had of Donald Trump were all of a sudden, well, we wish him all the best, and he's good at business, and he's not stupid, you know. And so everything did a turnaround within hours, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Although I'll pour a little bit of cold water on whether, a bit like in Brexit, whether actually the equity market is the right metric to assess how calm broader capital markets are. Because, of course, if you look at emerging markets, they've been selling off quite aggressively since the election result. You also look at some of the bond market turbulence. So bonds have been selling off. The Treasury 10-year has gone up to a yield last seen in January of this year, on the expectation that inflation and more deficit spending may leads to investors requiring more of a risk premium to hold treasuries. But also, what will be the reaction from that crucial country, and I mentioned it earlier, China, which holds a large quantity, more than $1 trillion worth of treasuries. What will be their reaction should Donald Trump label China a currency manipulator, which a lot of people expect them to do? Will they try to use their soft economic influence, and certainly the holdings of treasuries, to drive a kind of almost a retaliation to that move? So I think, as I say, sum up, equity markets, yes, they've been, they've held up much better than most people assumed, but there is turbulence in wider capital markets. I do think we need to keep ahead of that.
Yeah, but it's almost like when you saw, I think, you know, all the, like you said, the rhetoric will be diluted somewhat, because even, and a good example of this is his meeting with Obama. You know, they weren't best friends, they never met each other, and behind each other's backs, they're really having a go. Then yesterday, they're best friends, pretty much, and really being respectful to each other. And so you think, really, when it comes to face-to-face, I mean, if Donald Trump goes, you know, to China or Russia, but China especially, I think there'll be a bit more respect, you know, and hopefully they'll see some common ground there, and you know.
So the point I'd make on that is that you're absolutely right. Look, both in Hillary Clinton's concession speech and also in what Barack Obama said, they both mentioned the importance of an orderly transition, and clearly this is given heightened importance given the protestations that turned violent in Oregon overnight, that transition had to be smooth because nobody, rather the incumbent or indeed the president-elect, benefits from a disorderly transition. I think the catch to that is that when Donald Trump does take to the White House, he has made some very, very clear promises to his electoral base regarding trade policies, the attitude to America first in brokering trade deals, but also the quite totemic Mexican wall that he's spoken about, and the impact to and the screening, the quite intensive screening of people of Muslim faith coming to the US. Those kind of things, if he becomes a pragmatist and dispenses with an awful lot of his rhetoric, does his base, who were angry to start with, become ever more angry because they feel they've been betrayed by someone who was, in inverted commas, saying what they think? They voted someone to be different to the Washington elite, and then he is seen to actually just be another version of the Washington elite. And I think we start to play with fire when you see a disgruntled electorate who clearly were a big part of the protest vote that delivered him into the White House, if they feel they're not getting what they voted for. So I think this, there's no golden scenario here, I'm afraid, whichever way his policy prescription goes.
Yeah, I think when it comes down to it, though, he will try to, his best. And I think he will have tantrums and kick his toes on the pram if he doesn't get what he wants on the American economy, as in building infrastructure and all that, because he said he promised that. But I think when it comes down to being really, in conflict with other countries, he may be backed down a bit more, because it's not really comfortable for him to do that personally, is it? But I think he will try and be a job creator, like you said, because I think, essentially, that's very important, isn't it?
Yeah, and you do look at parallels, and the good parallels, potentially, with the 1930s. Everyone focuses on the... which is associated with the fact that Roosevelt, when he took over from Hoover in 1933, went on a big deficit stimulus program that built roads, infrastructure in the U.S., and it led the U.S. to lower unemployment rates and a higher level of growth. So there are some nice lessons from history. The question is whether he can afford it, given the size of the U.S. debt already.
Okay. And anything else we've been looking at, Simon?
Yeah, so a bit of a look at the week ahead in the UK. Coming into next week, we get consumer price index, inflation data, a reminder that was 1% last month, but most estimates, including the Bank of England, expect that to be north of 2% target by the middle of next year and heading towards 3-4%. So that's clearly a data point to watch. Wednesday, we get unemployment data and wages data in the UK, and Thursday, we get retail sales. So post-Brexit, economic data has held up well. We get a further slug of that next week. And then just to finish off the podcast, I just wanted to touch on a speech by the chief economist of the Bank of England, Andy Haldane. These central bank speeches invariably are very dry, very boring. Andy Haldane, I have to say, is the exception. If some of your listeners are wondering what to do with the weekend, have got a bit of time on their hands, then his 41-page speech includes graphics of Frisian cows, hydrogen bombs, and World of Warcraft imagery. And I think this, represents the kind of thinker that he is. He's asked in the Bank of England to think the unthinkable. Of course, he was the guy who was talking last year about abolishing physical cash and just having digital cash, and that created a lot of adverse headlines, but he's asked to do that. And the real emphasis of his speech was to say, look, the economics profession have had a terrible, terrible record at forecasting events, both in the lead up to the financial crisis and particularly since the financial crisis. And he's saying, look, there's lots of rich specialisms and skills to learn from biology, from physics, from psychology, that needs to permeate the economics profession so that it gets a track record of forecasting the kind of economic events which we've been buffeted for the last decade.
Yeah, well, it's nice to have a bit of new thought, and especially a couple of pictures of Frisian cows. Nice there. So I may check it out if I got some downtime. Si, thanks for it. Have a nice weekend. Speak next week.
You too, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. They are at number five. It's very rarely out of this list. Phenomenal. It's the most followed company on the Vox Markets website. And of course, I had the CEO on this week. It's CloudTag, CTAG, at four. Been getting a bit of interest here at the moment. Copper's good. It's a phenomenal stat. I don't know if you do my minute roundup in the mornings. But Copper has had his best winning streak for 28 years. off the back of Trump and China, of course. And Asia Met Resources, ARS, is at number four today. Strong riser. At three, good news out yesterday, Starcom. Star is a ticker there. At two, Chris Akers mentioned them yesterday on the podcast, is EVR Holdings. Of course, virtual reality. I do hold some stock there, and Chris is closely aligned with that story. And another company he is closely aligned with, very hot at the moment. Of course, I wrote a blog on them 6 weeks ago, YOLO Leisure and Technology. That's YOLO, is the most followed company on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. All right, here are the top five most liked RNSs on the website this morning. At five, Range Resources, RRL, Trinidad Drilling Program Update. At four, Buckley Energia. I had Paul Athley, the CEO, on yesterday, talking about the very low-cost uranium producer. They're going to be in Salamanca in Spain, and that's holdings in the company. And I think BlackRock, one of the biggest funds in the world, have upped their stake to more than 5%, which is good news, of course. At three, Canadian Overseas Petroleum, third quarter results. At two, Canadian Overseas Petroleum. Yes, two there. Two RNS, like the management's discussions and analysis. And at number one, the most liked RNS on the Vox Markets website this morning was actually from Colin, or his company, on the podcast. Ascent Resources, who was on the podcast earlier. AST, the IPPC permit, and operational update. That's it for the podcast. Listen, last 2 days, I haven't had any stocks suggested for one for your watch list. What's happening? If you know of a stock, please get involved here, because this feature lives and dies. And I think it provides, you know, a valuable bit of content and bit of research. But it lives and dies and breathes by your input. So if you know of one, please go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. And you'll see one of my posts there. Scroll down at the bottom there, you'll see, do you know of a stock that should be on someone's watch list? Then click this link here, and I could be featuring on tomorrow's podcast. If you can do that, please, that would greatly help out the content of the show and keep it alive, keep it going, keep me in a job, you know. Thanks very much. And also, thanks for listening. If you listened this far, I do appreciate it. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.